Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozura, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 106. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozura, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. And Dave, the 2024 owners meetings are taking place in Orlando, Florida. And so this time of year, we will hear from Mike Tomlin. Already heard from Mike Tomlin. Ton of information from him. Likely hear from Art Rooney sometime later this week. And the rare Steelers news before the podcast has occurred. The Pittsburgh Steelers reportedly signing wide receiver Quez Watkins to a one-year deal. So a good start to the Monday news happening before we start, as opposed to 10 seconds after we end the podcast.
Yeah, we're officially starting this 45 minutes later than we normally try to start. We don't always start on time. That might come as a surprise, but I'm just trying to figure out, am I in the pole position or are you in the pole position?
If you're not first, you're last, Dave. That's what Ricky Bobby once said. But that is the framing of how Tomlin is calling the Russell Wilson, Justin Fields quarterback situation. Russell Wilson is in pole position.
No surprise there. But I think Mike Tomlin, as good as you can try to make both people happy, and it's impossible to make everybody happy in this world, for sure. But how much time do you reckon he spent on trying to frame that ahead of? Look, he hasn't spoken to the media in a little while now, and obviously knew, you know, with him showing up at the annual owners meetings and all like that, and the annual AFC breakfast that's occurring this morning, Monday morning. He knew that he was going to be asked several questions about, you know, things that have transpired since we last left off. And oh boy, there's been a lot of that that he had to cover. And obviously the quarterback position and the two new guys in the room on that. I thought he laid it out pretty well overall. Look, I mean, and it's no surprise. I mean, this is Russell Wilson's job right now, but you know, there's going to be, how did he phrase it? There's going to be times where Justin Fields will be allowed to compete, and you know, but make no mistake about it, Mike Tomlin to clarify said, you know, Russell Wilson's going to be in the pole position here, and that's how basically things are going to start once training camp gets open there. And you know, not a shocker. I always find it amusing how he wordsmiths the things around the topics at hand.
Fields will compete when appropriate, I believe was the verbiage that Tomlin used. Now, what does when appropriate means? That's for us to discuss. And so I'm sure we'll do that today. But yeah, you're right. Obviously, both guys started last year. Both guys are competitors. Both guys want to start. You can't make everybody happy in that sense, as you said. So the second best thing you can do is make terms clear to both men, to Wilson and to Fields. And I think Tomlin has done that. This is not to say that Wilson is the slam dunk week one starter. I don't think Tomlin has gone that far, although we probably both expect Wilson to be that guy for that regular season opener, but that Wilson will be getting the first initial reps come the spring and when I go back out to Latrobe for training camp.
Yeah, look, this is Russell Wilson's job to lose, at least initially. But, you know, is it out of the question that you get a couple of games into the season and, you know, God forbid, you have a situation like you had with Mitch Trubisky, what, 3-4 games in, and things aren't going well. We've seen Mike Tomlin pull the plug once and pull it with a rookie quarterback at that at the time. So, but, you know, they, as we've said several times, this team, you got to credit Omar Khan, and Mike Tomlin sure did, yesterday when he spoke to the media talking about, you know, they thought they were going to go into this into this, you know, offseason trying to target, you know, try to land one of the two of Russell Wilson and Justin Fields And they ended up getting both. And Mike Tomlin tipped his cap to Omar Khan being able to accomplish both those things there. But I'm in the same position I was, you know, not too long ago in the fact that, yeah, could it have been sexier? Mike Tomlin was asked about, you know, did they even go down the Kirk Cousins road and all like that. And we knew that was going to be way too expensive of a trip down the road that way, and not surprising that they really didn't go down that road. But in essence, I think you just got to tip your hat at them not staying status quo with the way that room was. And now you've got two guys in it in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. And there's two more quarterbacks coming in some way, shape, or form the rest of the offseason. But, Mike Tomlin put out the pecking order there today.
You mentioned the way that Tomlin words and phrases things. And one that he says from time to time is have a plan, but be light on your feet. And Pittsburgh's plan seems to be going into the offseason, acquire one of Wilson or Fields. And once they got Wilson and then Pickett, you know, essentially wanted out, Tomlin confirming that, saying that Pickett wanted a change of scenery that opened the door for Justin Fields. And so the plan was to get one, but then once Pickett reacted the way that he did and was ultimately gone, Pittsburgh went after Fields, got a great deal for him. So to me, this offseason really embodies that idea of have a plan, but be light on your feet because things change in a hurry and you have to be able to react to it all.
All right, some breaking news here, but not Kenny Pickett type. not where we're going to be fumbling around for words or or anything like that. Ian Rappaport saying that the NFL has banned the hip drop tackle. The competition committee was unanimous on it. At least that's what Ian Rappaport is now saying on Twitter. And I know that's going to not make a lot of defensive players happy. Probably will make some offensive skilled players happy there. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of the fallout from that. The other breaking news that we had at the top of the show there with Quez Watkins signing with the Steelers here. You get a guy that's, coming up on 26 years of age, drafted originally by the Eagles in the sixth round, 200th overall in the 2020 NFL draft, has played in 49 games, 98 receptions, 1,249 yards, 6 touchdowns for him. You get some Andy Weidel familiarity with him, right? Going back to the time with the Eagles, right. Overall. So there is that link. The Steelers sorely needed to add more wide receiver bodies to the room. But just at a glance here, Alex, and because of the timing of this, I'm going to go out on a limb and think this might be a veteran benefit deal for Quez Watkins here. And we're still waiting to find out the exact numbers on Van Jefferson. Those have yet to be to surface yet, but we could have our two latest wide receivers in both Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins as both being veteran benefit deals, which in the grand scheme of things does not interrupt anything else from potentially happening at the wide receiver position moving on forward into the rest of free agency and more specifically the draft, right?
So you're saying this does not solve Pittsburgh's issues at wide receiver, correct?
It adds speed to the room, I'll tell you that. But, you know, what's interesting, you get another former, you get another wide receiver with a limited experience that, you know, has a little bit of, you know, pedigree to him and all. But yeah, it doesn't do anything to the draft. It doesn't do anything. Both these guys, Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins, have to earn their roster spots.
Absolutely. The thing I remember about Watkins, as you said, is speed. What did he run coming out? He ran something stupid fast, 4.3s, I want to say, when he came out of Southern Miss. Was the first thing I recall about him. He ran 4.35.
4-3-5. Yeah, he ran away from, who was it, Norwood one time? Was it a few? No, who was the DB he ran away from in that game a couple years ago?
I'm not sure, but I did have on Twitter that clip of that 79-yard touchdown he had in the 2021 preseason down the left side. If I try to open up the clip, it'll probably play all the audio.
Was that the one where Norwood took the bad angle on?
I don't recall top of my head. I just remember Watkins outrunning the entire Steelers defense on that play.
I remember that.
You're probably right.
I seemingly for a preseason play, I think I remember that. But anyway, he's fast as a Dickens. But look, you add to the wide receiver room, which needs to be done moving forward even more than it has been at this point here. So. We'll wait and see what the contract says, but I'm willing to bet that's another veteran benefit contract.
And someone who can work out of the slot, according to PFF's charting in 2022, 482 slot snaps, as opposed to 185 out wide in 2023, 193 slot snaps and 107 out wide. Playing time has been reduced in recent years as the Eagles have kind of stockpiled receivers, acquiring AJ Brown, Devonta Smith, and having some multiple tight ends to work with, but filling that slot role, that speed slot role, I think is going to be the ticket for Quez Watkins.
Special teams, much like Van Jefferson, not a lot, especially recently, to talk about. One special team snap last year, 13 in 2022, 26 in 2021, and none. Zero in 2020 there. So these guys, he better brush up. That might be a factor in him making the roster.
Sure. Any back end of the roster guy has to have some value there. He's done a little bit of kick returns, mostly in 2021, had 8 returns, largely unsuccessful, only 1 return last year. So, not entirely sure this team's kick returner will be at the moment, and that may become more relevant, assuming the new kickoff rules get passed later this week, in addition to that hip drop tackle being banned. With the hip drop tackle, just briefly, no surprise it was banned. That's been the NFL's intent for months now. We knew going into the offseason they were going to look at that and make a change. The question is, okay, how do you define the hip drop and how do you legislate that? Is it a 15-yard personal foul? I think that's what it's going to be. Will there be fines? There likely will be. But just how frequent will this call be and how do you define the hip drop tackle? To me, were the two most interesting things I'm not sure of reacting to this immediate news.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how they officiate this.
So we'll let you know probably by Wednesday, get some more clarification on the rule and probably some other changes as well. Pittsburgh's proposed to move the trade deadline back 1 week. Many other clubs have proposed moving it back 2 weeks. I assume something will happen either 1 week or two. That's likely one rule to pass. The kickoff rule will probably officially be modified, which will adopt the old XFL rules that'll pit the return team and coverage team within 5 yards of each other around the opposing 30, 35-yard line, and nobody can move until the returner fields the ball and then play starts. That'll reduce the number of long sprints and car crashes, while hopefully maybe incentivizing more kick returns.
Okay. All right.
All right, let's go back to Tomlin. He spoke initially to reporters, some Steelers beat guys on Sunday evening, and then had the breakfast on Monday morning speaking to anybody who wanted to attend. As you said, quarterback situation, Wilson pole position, Fields the backup to start. Tomlin explaining that Wilson, the veteran, the pedigree, the experience gives him the initial leg up, that Fields will compete when appropriate. What that means, again, that's for us to discuss and debate, but just to recap that, no surprise, that was the same language, pole position, being reported over the past week, and then Tomlin using that language today. And so, again, we expect Wilson to initially, when it comes to OTAs and minicamp and training camp, get those initial first-team quarterback reps.
Was it you that wrote this morning about quarterback controversy?
Controversy, yes. I think at some point, and we mentioned this, I believe, on a previous episode, that at some point this season, I don't know when, I don't know how valid that controversy will be, but I know there'll be some point where, Dave, we're writing about, or we get on a podcast on a Monday, and we're talking about so-and-so is saying that there should be a change in quarterback, a potential change. At some point, that's going to be asked about at a Tomlin Tuesday presser. again, you know, how valid and justified that is not my point. But at some point, I just know we'll be talking about that as the conversation of the day.
Well, that would require somebody playing bad, right? Or poorly.
Sure, that would mean Wilson, you know, struggling a bit or losing in over the course of a 17-game season. Even for elite quarterbacks, they have an off game or two, and Wilson is not in that elite quarterback category anymore. So, you know, I imagine at some point Wilson will have a poor game, and given the talent of Fields and the talent added in that room, and I bet you Fields is going to look pretty good in the preseason, Dave, against a bunch of backups with his arm talent and athleticism, excitement, maybe some package plays for him in the regular season. Everyone loves the backup quarterback. And so that's how I kind of tacked it. Not to say that there should be or that Pittsburgh's making a mistake by going with Wilson, just to acknowledge, just given the media, you know, cycle of it all, at any sense, any first sign of, you know, poor player weakness, there's always that talk for a change. And when you have a talented guy like Fields, I think that conversation will start sooner than later.
All right. He had some interesting comments on Justin Fields, and there being still some exciting meat left on the bone when it comes to him. He didn't want to get into it. Didn't sound like how the Bears used or didn't use Justin Fields and all like that. It's more like, look, this guy has some exciting maybe potential there that, you know, in so many words, Mike Tomlin's excited to get with him and see what he's all about.
Yeah, he says he oozes potential and talent and upside, and he does. It's the question of, can you reduce those negative plays? It's interesting, Dave. You know, last 2 years post-Ben, Pittsburgh's entire quarterback mantra has implicitly been, just don't make the big mistake. We're not too worried about you making the big play, but just don't be the reason why we lose. And then you add Wilson and Fields, who, as the numbers show, have the most negative plays of any two quarterbacks the last two seasons. Fields, since he came into the league, has been sacked the most fumbles, has the second highest interception percentage. But they also offer a lot more exciting and bigger plays and more potency with the offense. So it'll be interesting to kind of see that shift, because the last 2 years we're just kind of focused on, okay, don't make the mistake, don't pull a Trubisky. You know, Pickett, did, to his credit, took unbelievably good care of the football, but you know, you're going to get kind of get the other side of it this year with some negative plays, some frustrating moments, but hopefully a lot more positive ones. And so that'll be kind of a different shift in just how we expect the quarterbacks to play in Pittsburgh.
Okay. While we're on the quarterback position, he was asked about Kenny Pickett.
He was, and did confirm that Pickett asked for a change of scenery and wished him well. And, you know, essentially said all the things that had been reported and tweeted about by analysts and insiders before. So I don't know if there's any, maybe I'm wrong, Dave, but I don't know if there was any one piece of information that was brand new other than to essentially confirm that once they added Wilson, Pickett wanted to go somewhere else.
Did you get a sense with him talking about how they went in thinking they might get Wilson? We kind of hit on this a couple of shows ago there. You know, him just saying that they went into the offseason maybe kind of targeting one of Wilson or Fields, and then they ended up getting both. Do you, when you rewind to some of our past conversations, do you think there's a possibility that even had Kenny Pickett remained, that they still might have ended up with both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields?
I know we had discussed that briefly maybe a week or two ago. My sense is no, because I think if you have Pickett and, say, Wilson, how the initial setup was, then I think Pittsburgh would have been good with that. There again, their intent, as Tomlin admitted, was to get one of those guys. But then once Pickett went out the door, they needed another quarterback and then took advantage of the opportunity to go get Fields. So we'll never know for sure. Right. But my guess is that had Pickett just said, okay, I'll compete with Wilson, that would have been the two guys we'd be talking about going into to the summer, as opposed to Fields, who I don't know where he would have ended up, but probably not in Pittsburgh.
Mike Tomlin made sure to praise the leadership abilities of Russell Wilson and all those qualities that he brings to this team.
Yeah, and again, you're talking a 35-year-old Super Bowl winner. I mean, how many Super Bowl winners are on this team right now? Say Amalu, right? Landon Roberts, Wilson. Does Quez Watkins have a ring? Did he win one with Philly? No, he did not. But you know, it's a short list. And so to have that presence in Pittsburgh, the third youngest offense last year, to try to hopefully have some of those defined leaders. I know in Denver with Wilson and leadership, that was a hot button issue. Separating fact and from fiction is difficult to do, but that's certainly one component and why he's going to have that pole position right now. Also interesting for Tomlin to note that he was impressed by how much research Wilson did on Pittsburgh in their meeting that Friday before Wilson signed that Sunday before the legal tampering period opened up. So I think Tomlin was really impressed by Wilson's approach to making that decision on Pittsburgh and probably made him want to sign Wilson all the more.
All right. Anything left on the quarterback position here?
I think that sums it up well. Tomlin was asked about it, but how do you think that third and fourth quarterback come to Pittsburgh? Because as you said, as Omar Khan said, they're going to take four. The third and fourth are less consequential than one and two, but you're still curious how they're going to go about filling out that room.
I don't think they'll be as name recognizable as Wilson and Fields are at this point. And who was the Chargers quarterback that ended up
Easton Stick?
Yeah, he's been already re-signed, right? Or signed somewhere. So that's going to be out of the picture there. I wouldn't think Ryan Tannehill would like to go jump in that room at this point, right?
Yeah, as a third stringer, I think he can do better or pull a Flacco and wait for something better to open up.
Is there a possibility still that this team adds one late in the draft? I don't think you can rule that out. And as far as another one there, it would probably be someone on that lower end, less recognizable name, like an Easton Stick.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's only a couple pads left, the low level free agent to late round day three draft pick, undrafted free agent. They'll have a combination of two of those avenues to fill out three and four. Exactly, you know, how and where we'll see. I think late round quarterbacks to monitor for Pittsburgh are Carter Bradley from South Alabama. We mentioned Tom Arth, quarterbacks coach, being at that pro day. I think Jordan Travis from Florida State, interesting guy. If he falls a bit because of the leg injury, I just watched his tape last night. I think he's a pretty decent quarterback prospect. I'm not somebody who's high on taking quarterbacks, you know, on day three. I'm generally opposed to it, but in terms of what Pittsburgh could do, I could certainly see Jordan Travis on day three.
I agree with a couple of names that you threw out there as far as draft potential.
All right, non-quarterback talk from Tomlin. What's kind of your biggest takeaways overall? Just one off the top for me, and I just written about this yesterday, was the slot corner situation. We focus so much on the need at center and receiver, and those things are real and certainly true. But I think there's been much less discussion about slot cornerback, and there's really, to me, nothing there. Now Tomlin says they feel like they have some internal options, but they're looking, you know, outside as well. I think it's a huge hole this team has to address, and they can address it, but I'm not sure how they'll do it competing with the other needs this team has.
Yeah, he was asked about that, and I'm reading what he said. I haven't listened to what he said. He says, you know, we got some candidates, but obviously we're probably still looking. I think that's a position that we're all looking for and looking at annually, because some of the demands that come at the position in the NFL are somewhat different than in college. He goes on to say, in college, oftentimes that guy is a safety-like guy. The coverage is so significant in the NFL that most of the time that guy's a corner-like guy. So I think we're all kind of scouring that position annually and seeing what's available in terms of ready-made talent and so forth. So in other words, he's telling us he's going to draft Mike Sanders still out of Michigan, right?
I mean, that'll be one of the top names, one of the top slot corners in the draft, but I'm sure there's probably 10 other teams saying, we'll just go draft Mike Sanders still too, because he is that top slot corner. And so if it's not him, and again, Pittsburgh has a bunch of other needs, center, receiver, you know, how do you fit all the pieces is to be the ultimate question.
I guess what I'm getting at with making that comment is did he drop us a nugget there?
In what sense?
In saying that, you know, often, in other words, you know, in college, he's saying that guy's normally a safety-like guy, but in the NFL, it's a corner-like guy. Maybe they're looking for one that kind of fits both of those criteria.
Maybe. To me, that comment was the difficulty of finding that guy, because typically safety type of prop players do it at college, but at the NFL level, slot receivers are so good, you need somebody that's kind of more of a pure corner with pure cover skills. And so you're trying to find that guy in college who did it, who's a corner, or maybe, you know, a safety that could somehow, you know, make that jump. And I think Tomlin's comment was kind of to say it's difficult to walk that line between finding that guy from college who projects to do it at the NFL level.
All right. And yeah, look, this is still, say what you will about Dante Jackson, but at his A, it feels like he's going to be an outside guy, not a slot guy, right?
Right. That's what he's been his entire NFL career.
So it would be quite a surprise if they asked him to move inside. Second, they need a slot. I mean, they do. And while they might address that moving forward in free agency, it would, at this point, probably be a lower end cheap guy, and then still not prevent them from addressing the position in the draft overall. In reality, could they still use two corners, an outside and a slot, on this team?
Oh yeah, they need at least depth on the outside, and really an eye towards the future, considering Jackson is in the last year of his contract, even though they reworked that deal. What I think could be on the table is, and this has happened the last two drafts in the secondary, primarily in 2022, it was DeMonte Casey. In 2023, it was Keanu Neal, where you go into the draft, you know, maybe you re-sign a Chandon Sullivan before the draft. You go into the draft, see if you can get a Sandra Still, a Max Melton, somebody like that. If you can't, you re-sign Patrick Peterson the day after the draft, essentially. I mean, they did that with Casey. Not if it was a re-sign, they were outside guys, but I think Peterson might be their backup plan. And Tomlin even saying that today, that the door is still open to do business with Peterson. But essentially he said, you know, we'll see what the roster looks like, and then we'll kind of come back to Peterson, which to me basically says they'll go through the draft. We'll see if we can get a top end slot corner. If we cannot, then we'll try to re-sign Peterson for, I don't know, $3, $4 million this year.
Yeah, maybe even less than that. But it just sounded like the proverbial, the door, the light is on, the door is open. You know, we're not going to close off. We're not going to say that it won't happen, basically.
You think this was it Motel 6, leaving the light on for you? You think it's kind of one of those things? Is that even too strong? Is that a little too inviting?
I just think that they'd have to be in a very very unfortunate situation to bring Patrick Peterson back at this point.
Okay. Yeah, his comments was, there's so much business in front of us, and we just felt like it was appropriate to be transparent with him, to give him an opportunity to assess what's out there, I guess essentially saying in free agency. So that's my read of it. Who knows? But my point is they have to address it, because internally right now what's there, I really don't know what they would be turning towards if hypothetically the season were to start today. I mean, there really just aren't many even candidates, let alone, you know, viable options you're comfortable with playing 60% of the time.
Right. I agree. All right. Anything else? Let's see. Let's go to Mike Tomlin on Broderick Jones.
Yeah, this is, you know, going back to the conversations we've had and comments that Omar Khan made during the combine of, are you looking to move Broderick Jones over to left tackle, his quote unquote natural spot? And Tomlin, you know, didn't confirm or deny or anything like that. He just said, you know, we'll see how the roster looks. And that's true. You know, if you move Jones over to left tackle, you have a wide open hole at right tackle. You need to figure out what that right tackle would be before you actually would have make the move to Jones at left tackle. So I've kind of gone back and forth on my thoughts on Tomlin's comments. I know ultimately it was him just really punting the question, and there probably isn't necessarily a strong reaction to it. I just go back to my thought of, I want to do right by Jones first. I want to move him over to left tackle, and I would like to hear personally a bit more of that spirit of, we'd like to make it happen, as opposed to, we'll see what happens, which is essentially what Tomlin is saying.
Well, we do have to wait and see what happens, because as of right, I mean, we know Dan Moore is not going over to right tackle, or at least we think that we know based on things that have said in the past about Dan Moore being best suited to play left tackle if he's going to be on the field at all. Second, the depth chart behind those two is really, I mean, we talk about, you know, wanting to see more of Dylan Cook and Spencer Anderson, but there's a lot of question marks when it comes to both those guys. We'll see if this team adds another tackle here in free agency. However, if they do, there's not a lot out there at this point. You rewind the ad last year, I think around this time was a LaRaven Clark, and you kind of envision a guy added to that room being along those same lines. And then you get into the draft, and while that could go various different ways, rounds or whatnot, you still don't know what you're going to get. Long story short, especially if it comes via the draft, you have to be open, you would think, especially if you got a round one to round four addition at tackle, that you would at least be open to letting that person compete for the right tackle job. That would, in essence, if that player won that, would allow Broderick Jones to switch over to left tackle.
Sure. I mean, if they were to take somebody early, then that's certainly going to be on the table, and that's still possible. We'll have a discussion later about Tomlin's center, wide receiver comments, and where things fit. We know the tackle class is strong and drafts are fluid, so nothing is off the table right now. My just standpoint, Dave, is that I get Tomlin's point of to move Jones over, we'll have to have other pieces in place to feel comfortable doing that. I understand that, but I think you have to do right by Jones first, as opposed to, you know, doing right by the time you get somebody else and say, our intent is to move Jones over. And that even puts, I think, more of the onus. Okay, let's go get a right tackle as soon as possible. So I just don't want to have that lingering question or that potential issue that they ran into with Kevin Dotson, to a lesser extent with Kendrick Green, of playing that guy out of position because they're going down that road potentially again. I think it's a coin flip right now, Dave, in terms of where Jones will be. I think it's certainly, you know, 50% chance they run back the tackles they had last year, more at left tackle, Jones at right tackle. 50% chance they do take a tackle early and they can try to move Jones over. But point is, I would not be surprised one bit if week one it was Dan Moore at left tackle, Broderick Jones at right tackle. And I think that's just the wrong approach for this team to make. And I like Dan Moore. I've been a bigger Dan Moore fan than most people. I'm not calling him a franchise left tackle, but I've been higher on him than most. But you have to do right by Jones, the guy you traded for, the guy that's there on the roster, as opposed to that potential guy that's not on the roster right now. That should be their first step, and they're not really committing to that idea.
True or false, this team will draft a tackle at some point this year?
I mean, true, likely at some point, but that at some point is doing heavy lifting in terms of where Jones may or may not end up.
Okay. Let's see. Mike Tomlin, obviously excited about the marriage Patrick Queen brings, and you know, obviously excited to get to work with him. So really, there's not a lot, I don't think, to discuss about what he had to say about Patrick Queen, is there?
No, not really. Just general excitement to have a big time guy like that, and as they should be. If you're going to make him your highest paid free agent in outside Steelers history, you better be excited about it. And Mike Tomlin is.
All right. What do you make about what all Mike Tomlin said about the center position and the wide receiver positions?
Yeah, let me try to get, do we have exact quotes on that? I don't know if we actually have the video from that, because that occurred yesterday during the evening conversation with a couple of beat writers. But I'll pull some of the tweets that in commentary that came from that. Let's see. This is from Mark Gabali. The tweet says, quote, Tomlin says needs to be work done at center and receiver, still options out there in free agency, but believes there are many wide receivers that can come in and contribute ASAP in a handful of centers in the draft, but also said after a couple centers in the draft, it will likely not be plug and play. And then he had center, said they still have Nate Herbig, but essentially Tomlin's comment is, you know, options out there in free agency at receiver, which we just saw with Quez Watkins, and center, although I don't know what center free agent options Tomlin's referring to, but
Mason Cole
in the draft, though, receiver deeper than center. Center has a couple of top end guys, but once you get past those first couple of names, there is not the plug and play guy, is essentially what Tomlin is saying. And so to me, given that there is no free agent that you can go sign tomorrow and be plug and play. That hints that center will be the higher priority over wide receiver because of the depth wide receiver has.
Yeah, this isn't earth-shattering, but it's more confirmation, I think, than anything. The wide receiver class is deeper than the center class overall. Even though this is a decent center class from what we've seen in recent years, it is, as he says, after a couple of centers in a draft, it will likely not be plug and play. So, you know, essentially there's the top three or four in there, and even the there's a lot of quite how much did the Duke kid actually play at center?
He played there, Graham Barton, his freshman year. He had, I think, four or so starts. He was primarily a left tackle, so I would call it limited time at center.
Right. So you've got a lot of projection built into him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know some will probably try to immediately call that Kendrick Green because of the lack of experience at center. But I think, you know, everything I know about Barton is that he's more NFL ready just from a technical standpoint. And I think he can easier make that transition back to center than maybe some other guys can. But yeah, he does not have the experience of a Zach Frazier or Van Pran Granger or somebody like that in this class.
You would not call him plug and play at center.
I don't know. I know that off the top, you look at the limited resume at center, but can he go back there and play center? You know, if you're going to draft this guy in the first round, you know, you're going to have to play this guy likely sooner than later. I think that it's less talked about, but I don't want to rule out potential plug and play ability with Graham Barton.
Your read on basically what he reportedly said is that center might be higher priority in the draft than wide receiver. And that's not shocking at its core.
No, but still notable to hear that, because we don't usually hear them talk about the draft too much and comparing positions. They may have a general overview of strengths and weaknesses, but not necessarily comparing apples to oranges of center class versus receiver class. So again, the question comes, I mean, they're drafting a center, or like we all agree upon that. The question is, who and where? Is it first round? Is it second round? Is it going to be Powers Johnson? Will it be Zach Frazier, Barton, somebody else? To me, those are the outstanding questions.
All right, as far as wide receiver goes, barring them going out and maybe trading for a guy like Brandon Ayuk, they're going to draft a receiver. Too.
Sure. Again, the question becomes, you know, where and who and the body type. And based on their pre-draft visits, I'm not closing the door on anything, including first round receiver. But they brought in Pearsall from Florida, Leggett from South Carolina, and Corley from Western Kentucky. By the way, Corley's having his pro day right now. We'll have to see who from Pittsburgh is there. That indicates to me those are day two guys. They're going to do their traditional day two draft pick at wide receiver.
That does, at least from where we sit on March 25th, feel the way it's headed.
In addition to Tomlin's comments about the depth of this year's, you know, draft class. So, okay, hypothetically, because if they're taking a center in the first round, who are the options? Do you think Frazier is a realistic candidate at 20?
WVU, that massive pro day is still on the way this week, right? Or is it this week or next
week? This week, yeah. The O-line come in later this week. It'll be after league meeting, so we'll have a gauge. Tomlin and Khan will be free to go there, which I assume they'll be in attendance.
There's no way they're not at that thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how this thing's going to work. Will they only be there for certain days? Because it's a multi-day event. But I think they'll be there for Frazier's workout. Assuming he works out, he's coming off the injury. I don't know what his status is, how much he'll be doing. He did on field work at the combine, didn't test. He may be trying to test here at the pro day.
Right. So, I guess what you're asking is it too early for Frazier at 20?
Sure. That's what I'm getting at. In your opinion.
In my opinion, if that's the guy that you like and you want, does it matter if you take him at, we've seen this team go way ahead than round projections, you know, if that's the guy that you got to have and you like, do you run the risk of him? Because there are going to be one or two other teams that potentially looking for centers here.
Sure, no doubt. And the concern is if you wait after round one, do you get that guy in round two? Or what if there's a big run on the position, three picks ahead of you, and you're left holding the bag, and we're really in kind of Kendrick Green repeat territory, taking this guy that probably isn't ready and trying to make him ready versus whatever veteran options you have out there. And who knows, you may end up having Nate Herbig be your week one starter at center, which is a situation I do not want to find myself
right.
in.
Right, I agree.
The Duke Pro Day, by the way, I believe is Thursday this week. So the really important week for Pro Days. I know that these guys are kind of tied up with league meetings to start the week, but you know, I want to see if they're at that Duke Pro Day for Grant Barton. I don't know if they will. I know Duke does not have the number of prospects that other schools like Michigan and Bama have, but if they really want to look at Barton, they should be there for that Pro Day. At least Pat Myers should be there.
Yeah, I think I saw, and I think I have it set to record. I think YouTube TV says that there's some, there's going to be an airing of that Pro Day. So
okay,
I've set to record that. I suggest you do the same in case Mark messes up.
For sure. So I've kind of, again, gone back and forth. I mean, I've always been in the camp of round two more likely for center than round one because those guys tend to fall, again, open to round one. So if I kind of map this out in my head, okay, center round two, receiver, probably, you know, with one of those two third round picks, what happens in round one? Could that still be tackle? Could that be where tackle comes in? That's not off the table in a really good tackle class.
I think you're correct there.
What else from Tomlin? And
Cole,
speaking of,
go ahead.
No, well, I was going to mention just kind of bouncing off of that about why he hired Arthur Smith. And he talked about visions aligning, philosophy being the same, but he made the comment about that, you know, we have the same thought about how to build a team, you know, build it through our bigs, build it through our offensive line, which again, I wonder if that suggests, you know, a really heavy O-line approach with the top two picks in the draft.
And look, at its core, those, and especially with what has or hasn't happened so far in free agency, I mean, they've yet to really make a stab on the defensive side too, right?
On the D-line, yeah, they've done.
On the bigs.
Mean, besides re-signing Montrevious Adams, they lose Watts. Tomlin was asked about that and said, you know, I don't know a year where we haven't been looking for D-line help. And again, that's a consideration too. So my point in that Friday conversation was this team still has a whole bunch of needs, and I don't know if they're going to feel satisfied, you know, plugging everything by the time the draft is over because it feels like there are half a dozen areas you want to address all in round two, and you have 1 second round pick, right. Got 3 days on day two. So it's kind of a tricky line for them to currently walk.
I know all the years kind of run together and time gets away from you and all, but are you a bit surprised at kind of the perceived holes this roster has right now related to how they kind of like to put Wonder Seal on it, or
Flex Seal
on it by about this time, because we're almost 2 weeks into the start of the new league year. Does it feel like they're a little bit behind what they normally like to do at this point?
Yeah, I think it does. Now, you know, the obvious point is there's still a month until the draft, and they've already signed a receiver, which will help to some extent, and they're going to add more people, I assume, until then. And so as you always make the really salient point of, let's look at the totality of the offseason and kind of see where things at, you know, post-draft. And heck, this team can make moves in June. You know, we've seen them sign a Larry Ogunjobi, and they signed Quan Alexander in August last year. And so those guys ended up playing significant roles, and trades are always possibilities. But yeah, I mean, there are, I think, a lot of holes for this team. Not that the cost was much, but just kind of the calories burned on figuring out the quarterback situation maybe occupied their attention, you know, something that typically has not had to happen in past years. So maybe that's kind of, you know, been the thing that's really had to burn up their time, was determining how to handle and reshape and revamp the quarterback position.
Rolling back to early in this thing, do you think that they thought Mitch Morse might be a slam dunk for them?
I don't know. I mean, they probably knew Morse was going to cost a little something. So it's interesting, though, that they visited with him and, to our knowledge, have not met with any other center so far. Like, they were looking at a fairly high-level starter type and then just have done nothing since then.
Okay. I kind of wonder if maybe they thought that might have been able to lock that one up.
Possibly. I mean, it's clear they were immediately interested in him once Buffalo released him, and maybe they just felt like, okay, it's Warsaw, you know, we're not going to get somebody that we really, really want in free agency. I mean, are they going to sign a center? Are they before the draft, or are they going to just go with Herbig and a rookie?
I tell you, I mean, and we've seen the names. I mean, the list was already short a week ago, and what was remaining on that list has gotten even as unappetizing as it even was at that point, seems to have gotten even shorter. I mean, it's to the point now where would it be an awful thing to bring back Mason Cole on a minimum, on a veteran benefit contract, just to help keep the seat warm?
Yeah, at that level, you know, even if he's a backup and ultimately becomes the backup center and guard, I mean, I'm okay with that as long as you draft a center early. Right. Again, I mean, they have to do that. If it was like at center, they are in, put themselves in a corner where they have to address it within the top two picks.
I guess what I'm saying is Mason Cole the best of the rest right now?
Yeah, I got to look at the whole list again, but it's not an appealing list, like you said. I mean, who else is really out there? Connor Williams is coming off the severe knee injury last year.
It sounds like he might be a while, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going to sign anytime soon. He's going to get healthy first. And Michael Dieter, I've mentioned. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a couple of names, but nobody that's going to, you know, get you out of your seat.
All right.
Cole Holcomb, you said Cole Holcomb.
Yeah, right? A little bit of a Cole Holcomb update somewhat.
Yeah, you probably can speak to it better than I can. I think you wrote about that. But Tomlin said a favorable, what do you say, favorable just prognosis on Holcomb, who we saw working out last week?
Yeah, he said he had a favorable checkup with doctors a few weeks back, and he says he doesn't have any details from a calendar perspective on levels of availability. He said he'd be speculating by putting any timetable on his return. So it's a little nugget there, and we did have coming out of the end of last week, Holcomb, you know, posting on social media, him working at Bomarito Performance Systems, which I believe is down in Florida there. At least we have eyes on him. He's got a sleeve on that left leg up past his knee and all like that. So at least he's moving around. But I'm going to play Twitter doctor here. I would be surprised if he's able to do much of anything come OTAs, because he's like 4 months removed from surgery at this point. And you'd have to think he's got at least, I mean, even I think it's overly optimistic, you know, 3 or 4 more months, especially, you know, position he plays and that. In other words, I think what we need to look for with a timetable or a potential hopeful timetable with Cole Holcomb is he's not on active PUP come the time training camp gets underway.
Sure. And it's just a guess, but I have a guess he will start there. And to me, the question is, can he avoid reserve PUP to begin the season? My approach is, I think it's just the smart and really the only one to take, is you have to assume, from our standpoint and the limited information we have, including not even knowing fully what exactly the injury Holcomb suffered was. Was it straight ACL? Was it additional damage, multiple ligament tears? Was it nerve damage? And we just don't know, other than it was obviously extremely severe. But my approach is Patrick Queen and Landon Roberts will be your starting inside linebackers. From there, we'll kind of take it from there and see where things are at. Maybe Holcomb can be that third guy in that rotates in a bit the way that Roberts was doing so last year, or maybe it's just those two, or maybe something else, draft pick, you know, I don't know. But Queen and Roberts, in my mind right now, are your week one starting inside linebackers.
Real quick about inside off the ball inside linebackers. We have spotted
Aaron Curry.
Yeah, Aaron Curry at a couple of places.
We have, which is notable. He was at Ohio State for Tommy Eichenberg. He was at Kentucky late last week for Trevin Wallace. And was he somewhere else? Was he at a third location?
I don't remember. I know the two that we have, Matt.
Let's check our handy dandy Pro Day Tracker, but at least two. And so that would signal still some interest at bolstering inside linebacker depth. Now, you know, I think that's going to be later than sooner, but you're talking maybe late day two, early day three, potentially.
Mm-hmm. So it's not out of the question that they and look, you got a lot of questions about Mark Robinson still. So, and then obviously you got the questions concerning Cole Holcomb. So it's not unthinkable that this team drafts. Now it won't be early, but at some point you can see them drafting an inside linebacker.
And it was just those two places we're aware of for Curry, Ohio State, and Kentucky.
Isn't Chambers also potential?
Oh, yes.
From Ohio State?
Correct. Yeah, still Chambers and Tommy Eichenberg from Ohio State. I should have mentioned Chambers as well. Good point by you.
All right. Deontay Johnson did not request a trade, according to Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, that's notable. I know those rumors were out there and speculation based on reporting, just based on Johnson's at times last year seemingly unhappiness with the Steelers. But Tomlin saying that Deontay did not request a trade, which to me begs the question, okay, why did you trade Deontay Johnson again if he didn't want and specifically ask to be traded?
There's more layers to that onion we don't know about.
Yeah, I think do you believe Tomlin, though, when he says that Deontay did not ask for a trade? I do, for what it's worth.
I do, but there are, once again, I think it's more than just, hey, we had interest in Dante Jackson and we've long had interest in him and this was just a player for player swap. That's a nice way to frame it. Do I fully believe that? I think they were worried about maybe Deontay Johnson's overall attitude with things and old, you know, volunteers, not hostages. And obviously, you know, what's he thinking about his contract situation and all. Once again, that might we learn more about this as things as time goes on? Maybe. I don't think Deontay has formally held his, you know, media press conference. I know Panthers.com, I think, has some quotes from him, but I've been watching specifically to see, because I think the Panthers have already had like four or five other guys that they've added in free agency that they've had those, you know, in front of media sessions that they have on their website. I don't think long story short, it's going to be interesting to hear Deontay once that finally happens, speak on the matter.
Right. I'm curious for his comments. Yeah, I think it was the Steelers just reading the situation that, you know, there was the risk of some sort of tension. And as you said, you know, with Deontay hold in and how to handle that contractually, I don't know for sure. But
there's something more than, hey, we just wanted to go player for player here, like Mike Thomas. Because look, right. Joe, who was it? Joe Person, I think, from who covers the Panthers, stuck his head in there at the breakfast this morning. And Mike Tomlin, I think, has a relationship going back to him with William Mary, the way I kind of took it there. I think even was a teammate of his there. But he praised Deontay. You know, he's not going to kick him in the butt as he goes out the door. But said, look, great route separator. Great in short area, great and down the field as well too. Mike Tomlin really praised Deontay, said Panthers are getting a heck of a player there, as you would expect Mike Tomlin to say there. But long story short, there's more layers to this onion that we don't know about, I think.
Yeah, again, to me, this team from a pure talent to talent, player to player standpoint got worse going from Deontay Johnson to Dante Jackson. And you don't do that without additional reasons. Now, what those are, you said they're layered, they're numerous contractually, you know, just culturally, a bunch of stuff to go into. I like Deontay, don't think he's a bad guy at all, but it felt like Pittsburgh was ready to move on. But again, that opens up a big hole at wide receiver.
All right. Any additional takeaways from what Mike Tomlin had to say about Arthur Smith?
No, again, haven't seen the full quote on that, but again, visions aligning, all things that we talked about, really nothing that ended up surprising us. But I did think the, you know, having the same philosophy of building from our bigs and working out from there is notable in the context of where this team will have their draft priorities lie next month.
All right, new punter Cameron Johnston was the cream of the crop in free agency, Mike Tomlin said.
Yeah, and I think analytics was Tomlin's comment that led him to believe that the Johnston was that top guy. So I know I had pushed for Tommy Townsend, but I think Johnston, a good punter. The hang time is the concern. His hang times are on the lower end, in part, I think, a little bit due to that Aussie background where he's not, it's kind of a shorter stride whenever he punts. It's not the full extension traditionally on some of his punts you get from non, Aussie background type of punters. But again, he's been consistent. The net has not suffered despite the low hang time. You might want to have more attention to having a strong coverage team because the hang time is in that low 4.2s as opposed to maybe 4.3s, 4.4s. But bottom line is Pittsburgh got better at punter. There's no question about that.
Mike Tomlin is not anticipating it to be a factor when asked about Cam Hayward possibly being ready for training camp following his surgery a couple weeks ago.
Good to know. It was not really a thought that had entered my mind. I know he's had now two surgeries. He had the groin surgery and then had some other procedure done after the season. But I'd always assumed that Hayward was going to be good for camp, and Tomlin. It was not asked about the contract on Hayward, though, right? There was no discussion about that.
Not that I know of, but I think that'll come out in the wash.
Yeah, but that's to me the lone question on Hayward. Not if they'll do it, but when they do it and how it looks. I'd always assumed he was going to be ready and good to go for training camp. May get some of those more veteran rest days, as he typically does, but that's fine by me.
Let's see. They've yet to make a decision on Najee Harris and his fifth-year option. Probably not shocking. They usually, try to stay tight-lipped on that kind of stuff. Is there a reason not to pick up that fifth-year option on him?
It's a good question.
It's fully guaranteed once you pick it up. But when you look at the landscape, I guess of the, The only thing that I think that could potentially be an issue is if Najee thinks it's time to be paid now.
Well, nothing prevents that conversation from happening if you pick up his option. I mean, that you can still work out an extension.
Right. I think that's where the, because if you look at the running back market right now, as it sits now, your top five are McCaffrey at $16 million, Kamara still at $15 million, Jonathan Taylor at $14 million, Barkley at $12.583 million, Chubb at $12.2 million, Jacobs at $12 million, Joe Mixon now at $9.875 million, Derrick Henry at $8 million. And what do we say the fifth-year option is on Najee Harris?
6.7, I believe, right around in that range for that fifth-year option for 2025.
Let me just double-check my numbers here. Yeah, $6.79 million. So, and that's next year,
Mm-hmm.
So, is Najee looking at what he's done so far and saying, man, I appreciate you guys picking that up, but I'm only scheduled to earn $2.439 million this year. Can we do something about that? Is there a possibility that they sign him to an extension a la kind of, as we've talked about, what the Panthers did years ago with McCaffrey before the fifth-year option decision was made? I mean, and once again, they could exercise this and this run on into the summer, and then they decide. I just wonder what Najee's thinking about the running back market and him potentially making not even $2.5 million in 2024.
Sure, that's fair and true, and I bet you he is. He's had conversations. Wasn't he part of the Austin Eckler meeting last year when they had that kind of push? And the running back market seems to be doing okay for itself this year. So if there's kind of a time to strike, it might be now in a quote unquote down running back class, might be pushing up some of these free agents and some good talent out there to sign in Eckler and Josh Jacobs and Barkley, et cetera. So yeah, I'm sure that Harris is aware of that fact, but regardless if Pittsburgh does or doesn't pick up the fifth year option, that conversation in Harris's mind stays the same. So I think at least if you're, you know, you're Pittsburgh, you pick it up, you might have those talks. You know, could an extension happen? It could. Does Pittsburgh want to do a second deal with a running back, a guy that's had the workload that Harris has had? You know, we'll see. But for now, I'm going to assume and feel pretty confident they will pick up the fifth year option and we'll proceed from there.
All right. It's a big day. Tomlin discusses radical change on new kickoff proposal. What are your thoughts on that proposal and all?
Yeah, there was actually some news that came across, and I don't believe anything has been officially decided, but it was not the resolution to modify the kickoff rule, which again would go back to the XFL rule of players 5 yards apart from each other on the opposing side of the field has not been addressed today. And I believe it was Ian Rappaport that said it seems like that idea will be tabled until May and addressed then. The league seems to want it. The special teams committee has created this rule. I don't know what really is who's not advocating for it at this point. If the league seems to be for it and the coaches seem to be for it, I'm not sure what the obstacle is, but that decision may not occur until the May owner meetings.
All right. He was also asked about the addition of Deshaun Elliott. He says, I'm really excited that he's here. He's a really good tackler. He's a really good communicator. He has some of the natural traits that I think really makes you excited about adding to your defense from a safety perspective. He's not a newbie by any stretch. He's been in the league. We're familiar with him. He's familiar with us. And I just think that makes me really excited.
Yeah, summed it up well. Again, I think it's an underrated signing. It's 2 years, $6 million. It's not going to radically change this defense, but to have a defined, strong safety, a box guy, somebody that can tackle, hopefully be your every down kind of guy, something they lacked last year with their rotation of Neal and base packages and Casey and nickel and dime and sub packages, which I didn't love that much. I like to have a cleaner division of labor between strong safety and free safety to allow Minkah to play more, you know, traditional. Yeah, I've thought about this some, Dave. You know, with Minkah, I know that circumstances are sometimes out of their control, but what was it, 2021, they had him in the slot, and that didn't work well, and he had to play a bunch of box last year. Like, they have not really been able to let Minkah really get to be Minkah for consistently for a couple of years.
You have to really go back to his first season, don't you, with the Steelers? Mm-hmm.
Was there an obstacle in 2020 that didn't allow him to kind of play more, you know, that true blue free safety? Was there an issue that year?
Trying to roll.
That was Hilton's last year. They had the slot guy. I don't recall. I think the first 2 years. I mean, obviously, Minkah's gotten to play free safety and has made a bunch of plays. And, you know, they kicked him out of the slot after a couple, you know, bad games in 21. So, I mean, they've adjusted. But, yeah, I just feel like they've kind of been having to plug Minkah in a bunch of holes and just kind of like, their default answer to everything in the secondary is, we'll let Minkah do it. And I mean, he can kind of do it because he's so talented, but I just want him to be able to freely play, you know, free safety. And adding Elliott is one component, but I look at the slot situation and you wonder, okay, are they going to shoehorn Minkah back into that as they did in that 21 season, which was not good for anybody, for the team or for Minkah. And I hope that does not occur.
Mike Tomlin was asked about concerns about Minkah getting back to his playmaking ability in 2024. He says he doesn't have any concerns about it. To me, it's about availability. If he's available, he's going to be making plays. And obviously that harkens back to him missing that time with injuries last year.
Sure. And I get that. Although again, just to reiterate, you know, when you have him in the box 20% of the time, it's harder for him to make some of those plays. My issue is not with Minkah, the player, the talent, it's just making sure he's freed up to do the things that he's capable of doing. And I think Pittsburgh has struggled to do that consistently for several seasons.
I agree.
All right. What else from Tomlin? We should note here on the hip drop tackle. And again, we're just kind of getting some pieces of information. I mean, I think Rich McKay or maybe Jeff Miller, somebody from the NFL, one of their execs said, you know, essentially that this is going to be hard to flag on the field and that basically they're just going to find it a bunch during the week. So I'm not even sure what this is accomplishing at this point, Dave, if they're just going to find and not flag outside of maybe super obvious situations. But that seems to be the at least the NFL admitting, OK, we made this rule change and it's going to be really, really hard for us to enforce on the field.
I think according to the rule proposal here, it says Article 18 hip drop tackle. It is a foul if a player uses the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. A, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and B, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's leg or legs at or below the knee.
I mean, I get it, and there are times where it does look obvious. I want to try to find the comment that I saw that I referenced about them, you know, potentially just finding it a lot more than actually flagging it, and I cannot do that off the top. But well, I mean, my question is, how do you tackle somebody that's in front of you that you're chasing directly behind?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because I don't really know.
Is this going to be one of those you, or we think or hope that it's, you know, it's a hip drop when you see it?
Yeah, I get it. There will be some obvious instances of it where I think it will get flagged. I think there's going to be some. My concern is it's going to be like how they were flagging some of the helmet contact, the lowering of the helmet contact, where you're going to, you know, find out on that Saturday, oh, he got flagged? He got fined for that? Like, we go back and watch the play and say, really? They called him for that? You know, hey, remember Miles Killebrew last year got fined on a punt rush for, like, had you watched that play a million times, you would have never would have guessed there was anything wrong on that play, but mm-hmm. what they tagged him for, they happened to warn a bit last year. Could that happen with a hip drop tackle? Potentially. The comment I have from Ian Rappaport from Rich McKay, who's one of the NFL executives, says, quote, this will be a hard one to call on the field. You have to see every element of it. We want to make it a rule so we can deal on the discipline during the week, which AKA means fining. So a rule that'll be lightly flagged and heavily fined seems to be my interpretation of it.
Okay.
But again, tackling from behind, I just wonder, again, goal line, like what happens if the guy, you know, if you're on the goal line, you have to stop his momentum. You can't let him fall forward into the end zone. I understand the safety concern and the injury rates on these tackles. I would just wish the NFL would say, okay, you can't do this. Here's what we think you should do instead in terms of tackling technique. And I'm not seeing the NFL indicate that.
Yeah, we're going to have some discussions about this for sure.
Definitely. All right. What else? Anything else from Tom? I think we hit on the major things overall from Mike Tomlin. I'm just going to kind of look through one last time and see if there's anything else left that we have not discussed.
Obviously, some of this will, as we get more context and go through it with a fine tooth comb, I'm sure we'll be talking about on Wednesday.
Right. And I think we'll hear from Art Rooney at some point this week during the league meetings. That's typically more of a one-on-one interview. I believe Tomlin also does a one-on-one with, you know, Missy Matthews or somebody from Steelers.com. But I think we've hit on essentially all the major news stories.
Main talking points I think we've got. All right, where else should we go?
Yeah, I want to take this in just one other direction. And I know we've talked about it a ton. I don't want to spend as much time on it today. But it is a good reference point for the conversation that we had. And I think you might be right about something. So I think it's good to bring it up when we talk about the Dave Was Right type of segment.
Oh, wait a minute. We need some sort of intro music to this.
Yeah, no, little band playing right now in your head. L'Jarius Sneed finally got traded from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Tennessee Titans. And the compensation was, I think, the large sticking point of why it took so long for Sneed to be moved. But it's pretty light. It's a third round pick next year in 2025 and randomly a seventh round pick swap this year. I wonder how much haggling was around the seventh round pick swap to get that deal done between Kansas City and Tennessee. Now Sneed has signed an extension for your $76 million to be a top 10 paid corner in football. So, you know, the question is, does this become a reference point and framework for a potential Ayuk trade for any team, but also because Pittsburgh has been talked about and you and I have discussed it the last couple of episodes? Do you think that's now creating framework for a potential Ayuk trade?
I have, you know, and look, we've tried to take this thing out of the box and look at it from all different angles. We, you know, most recently I wrote the article about the plausibility of could the, you know, if indeed the 49ers were interested in trading Ayuk, is it plausible, at least from a financial aspect, and really now maybe more so where you're leading this conversation from a compensation standpoint, is it plausible for the Steelers to do such a deal? And I think the answer, especially after seeing what Sneed brought in compensation, I believe yes. Now the 49ers will probably contend. That's a whole different situation and all. But once again, I think how many teams are actually interested in signing, I mean, in trading for and then signing Ayuk to a deal. That list has got to be short. Second, how at its core, how desperate are the Chiefs? Were very desperate to trade away Snead. From the moment they tagged him, it was probably with the idea of buying us time, tie up the cap space momentarily because of the tag to see what we can get deal done. I think they were a lot more motivated in the situation. We do not. Here's something that I did since we last talked. I wanted to look at the 49ers side of things. Potentially, I wanted to understand their cap situation, where they are, and in essence, look at if are they guaranteed to trade Ayuk? Are they in as of a desperate situation as, say, the Chiefs are? And look, I don't study the 49ers financial situation week in, week out, and really, you know, I study the Steelers and that's it. But I went really, really deep into what they have done this offseason, what their cap situation is. Now, here's a key thing when it comes to their situation. From my understanding, you know, they released Eric Armstead with a post June 1st designation. So they have to wait till June the 2nd to recoup about $18 million in salary cap space for 2024. That's pretty significant. That's a lot of cap space. Sure. And they have already restructured the contracts of three or four players this offseason. I think they're done restructuring there. Now, there are several contracts, at least as of the time that I wrote this post, of players that they have signed this offseason that the contract details have not surfaced on. A lot of these guys are one-year contracts. They're probably not going to move the cap needle significantly. There is, however, that Floyd contract out there that's probably going to have a somewhat significant cap hit. All told, though, and look, I want to be careful here because I don't know the inner workings of how they do things and how much cap space they're going to need to start the year and those kind of things. But all told, just when it comes to looking at 2024, they can make Ayuk. It feels like they can make Ayuk work if they had to make Ayuk work on his current fifth year option amount, which is a little bit over $14 million. Now, the separate part of the conversation is what's Ayuk thinking? He wants to get paid, right? He wants to get paid by somebody this offseason. And as part of that, might he consider a hold in, blah, blah, sure, blah, those kind of things. I think that's significant in this. And then now I think more importantly, you roll back to what and how much of this is GM speak. I don't know. But John Lynch, their GM, was asked at the end of February, you know, about Ayuk and, you know, possibility of a long-term extension. He says, we have some challenges. We have a lot of good players who we've rewarded. Brandon's one we think incredibly high of, one of my favorite guys around the building, blah, blah, blah. He's a competitor. He plays with such physicality. Also, you know, he's praising the player. And then he goes on, he says, and then he's got flair for making plays. And he ends it with basically saying, and I think we've got a nice track record of extending the players that are important to us. And Brandon's the guy we want to keep around for a long time. All right. Now, he said this at the end of February. I believe that they would like to keep Ayuk if at all possible.
Sure.
Ayuk's contract demands might play a role in this, but within that, let's say the Steelers did trade. I know I'm going down the rabbit hole here on things that you laid out here. if Aiyuk's traded to the Steelers, they are going to want to, what their methods of negotiation is going to be, hey, first year guaranteed money, not going to get, you know, we'll beef up that March roster bonus and all like that, virtually guarantee that. But our rules are our rules. And oh yeah, there's always the threat of the franchise tag next year that don't make Omar Khan go open that case in his office and brandish that sword type of thing there. My takeaway is this, Alex. The 49ers can make it work with him, and I would think that if they were going to deal him, they would want to deal him before the draft. And that's kind of a Captain Obvious mm-hmm. thing. If it gets past that with him, then odds are probably they're going to get him done, signed to an extension, I would think, later on in the summer. Now, back to your, I think, where you were taking this thing. If they did trade him, I believe it'd be less than a first round pick.
I agree with the question, but that's still a wide, you know, group of possibilities.
And like I said in that, and I think what you're referencing to, I could see Omar Khan angling for a third round pick being the highest part of the compensation. I believe that's what I said in that last sure. that last podcast.
Sure. No, you did. You did. But with Snead, he got a third round pick next year, which has less value than a third round sure. pick this year. And the question is, are these situations comparable? I will say on the contract part, I mean, if Aiyuk were to be traded anywhere, take Pittsburgh out of it, a deal will essentially be in place. Snead,
right.
5 minutes after his deal was announced, they announced, the reporters announced the contract term. So right. to me, there's no concern about, you know, haggling over, you know, guaranteed structure of the contract. Those things will be decided as part of the actual, you know, compensation for the deal.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Logic tells you that any team that trades for Aiyuk's doing so and probably having the permission to talk to right. him to work out an extension ahead of time.
Right. So to me, that's, I'm not worried about that aspect, but I think you're,
I'm just saying as part of, let's assume, and that's dangerous, that 49ers have given Aiyuk permission to speak to the Steelers. I can see mm-hmm. part of that conversation being, don't make Omar go up there and open up that franchise tag case to show you that sword.
Yeah, but to me, I mean, if that's the leverage you try to use, he'll just say, I don't want to go there.
And okay,
the 49ers probably won't deal him that to there.
Well, and the 49ers might be using that same sword.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they certainly could be. But I think the point you made that I certainly agree with earlier is that, to me, the 49ers, maybe it's just a better PR campaign, I don't know, but have a less sense of desperation to trade Aiyuk than the Chiefs did with Snead. Once the Chiefs did the long-term deal with Chris Jones, we kind of knew, okay, they chose Jones over Snead. Snead is on his way out. They tag him, as you said, so they could just hold on to him and give them more time to work out a trade, which they did with Tennessee. So I still think Aiyuk could go for more because there's less of a urgency, it seems, to trade Brandon Aiyuk.
Okay. Once again, my takeaway is that the 49ers aren't in as desperate of a situation as the Chiefs. You would agree?
I do, yes.
Okay. Second, let me tell you how I envision if he is traded to the Steelers.
Okay.
I still contend that the best part of the Steelers part of the compensation would be a third, either this year or next year. And second, I envision the actual average yearly value of a contract worked out with him coming in slightly lower than what maybe many would initially think it might be. It's just that's Omar Khan's handiwork right there. Both those things.
Still above 20, though?
I don't know, because really? Once again, you're talking about a guy. What was
you said? You set the floor at 20, I think, on our last show, though.
I thought about it some more. Yeah, I what was the tag number for wide? And here's why. Let's see. The wide receiver franchise tag number this year is 21.8, I think. Mm-hmm. And right now, over the cap has it projected at 24.8, almost 24. What is 24.9 plus?
Something is what you're
talking about. His fifth year option is actually a little bit lower than that this year, isn't it?
I thought it was 14.
No, you're right. 14.1. So what is 14. Add 14.1 to that?
39.
All right. That's part of that weapon. What'd you say that number is 39?
Yes.
They're saying that's you know, if you had to play under the fifth year option and the tag the next 2 years, that's the max that you're going to make.
Correct.
Okay. So, all right, let's slightly beat that at 43 over 2.
You said 43 over 2?
Right.
All right, that gets you at...
What's that divided by 2?
21 and a half.
Okay. Maybe slightly over 20. But, you know, there are some people wondering if he would threaten... And look, I haven't broken this out in the Excel sheet yet. But if you look at the Debo Samuel is at 23.85 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably going to be angling to at least hit that number, right?
At least his angle, you know, you always get your angle, you know, we'll see, but that would be, I think, his agent's approach. And also Calvin Ridley, what did Ridley just get paid? He got well over 20.
And Ridley 22. is sitting 10th overall at 23 million.
Yeah. So I think certainly they're going to try to beat that mark.
All right. And then you got Higgins right now at 21.8 on the tag. So maybe slightly, but you know, there've been a lot of people wondering if he might get into that AJ Brown money of 25 million, you know?
Yeah, that may be too far. I mean, it's a couple million either way. It's, you know, if that won't be a sticking point, I don't think, to a contract.
All right. So anyway, rolling this back, I foresee if indeed the 49ers did trade him to the Steelers, I think potentially the highest part of the compensation might be a third rounder either this year or next year. And then obviously there might be something else attached to mm-hmm. that. You know, later round, something another. And then I have a feeling that Omar will try to do something below 23 million per, maybe even below 22 million per on the contract.
Yeah, I mean, you got Queen for less than what I thought, you know, Queen would go for. So fair point. Again, I probably spent, you know, longer than I intended to, but I did want to bring that up to you because the Snead trade, I think, does provide at least some sort of framework potentially for Ayuk, although I don't think those situations are completely apples to apples.
Right.
All right. So we'll keep you posted up on has John Lynch or anybody from the 49ers spoken about Ayuk during the breakfast today? Is Kyle Shanahan, do we know? I tried to look earlier. I didn't see anything just in my initial, you know, 2 minute search. But I imagine that's going to be discussed whenever Kyle Shanahan speaks. I don't know if he's even speaking today or tomorrow.
But is it today technically the AFC side?
Is that how they do it?
Don't they define this as the AFC breakfast today?
I didn't have my itinerary for the coaches, but I think you're right. I think I did see something about AFC. So tomorrow, then, I assume, will be the NFC breakfast where Kyle Shanahan, I'm sure, will be asked about Ayuk's future.
And yeah, you would think that would come up here in these next couple of days here would be a talking point about him. All right, real quick. I wrote about and I knew this post wouldn't do good. They never do. People don't like talking about cash and all like that when it comes to spending. But I you know, before the free agency got open and all like that, I said, look, I think this team might spend around $40 million in additional cash in free agency. Well, as we sit right now, when you look at displacement and the trades and looking at the roster as the top 53 as a whole, this team has spent almost 20 $1.5 million in additional cash. Now, once again, this is washing out the trades and displacement and all like that here as we sit right now. And when you look at their cash spending, what would you project? What I project they're going to spend as far as percentage of the cap number. Long story short, Alex, I think they're, you know, and when you project maybe a contract extension for Pat Freiermuth during the offseason, and obviously the what you have to pay the all of your rookie class as far as cash in signing bonuses, the math is still mathing kind of the way I thought it would math.
A lot of math verbiage in there.
Yeah. I still think that there's a potential of this team spending another $18 million or so in cash in outsiders or re-signings. And let's face it, anybody that they re-sign at this point is not going to use up a lot of additional cash. So if they don't, I mean, 18 would get you almost to that 40 million, right? You
know, yeah, the question is who and how, because yeah, the free agent list is dwindling.
Right. I mean, and we don't think Quez Watkins is going to use up a lot of additional cash there. Yeah.
I mean, there's the Freiermuth extension you've talked about, which will take some cash and
I've already built.
Oh, you already factored that
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I have already, because I mean, technically, if you look at, let's look at their bigger 2024 cash spending picture at the time, their current top 53 cash spending sits at a little over 184 million. All right. So what we're doing is we're taking the 53 man, the top 53 on the roster right now. We're adding up all the cash that those guys have taken up. And that includes signings and signing bonuses and all like that to the guys they brought in from the outside. All right. When they started free agency, they had a cash total of almost 163 million. All right. So that's where we get our net cash spending of the 21, whatever million so far. So their running cash total is a little over 184 million now. And I projected them for the season to spend $235 million. Well, you're probably saying that's quite a gap. That's almost $51 million. But once again, you got $4 million that goes towards practice squad. The rookie class is going to eat up another $15.2 million there. There's a workout offseason bonus. So I just ate up $20 million of that $50 million right there. So that brings us to roughly 30, 31 million. Let's say they give an extension to Pat Freiermuth. I could see that eating up another 12 million or so in cash there with signing bonus and all like that. So that brings you to roughly around $18 million left, you know, free, at least on paper that, you know, now look, we talked about a Najee potential contract extension. I did not take into account that, but even so, I mean, you know, what would the cash look like for that? You know, maybe 6 million, you know, I don't know. But in other words, this team's should not be done spending unless my projection of $235 million for the season's way off.
Yeah. I mean, it could be lower. What about, we don't talk about this too much. We mentioned it couple weeks ago, James Daniels extension in the summer. Guard market's red hot. If he gets paid, he's going to get paid a ton.
It's plausible.
I mean, he's a free agent after 2024. So if they want to do something, the summer is the time for them to typically take care of that kind of business.
I mean, look, if they don't, you would think that they're not, you know, are they? Here's the tough thing once again. This is the first year of the three-year CBA. We don't know how low or how high they're going to come in as far as percentage of the cap in cash, you know. But my number, I think, should be a couple of percent either way and all like that. Look, if they don't spend this $18 million, this extra $19 million, $18 to $19 million in cash on free agents or outsiders or trade or whatnot, where are they going to spend it? You know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that just means more aggressive in the next two off seasons. And even with Daniels, I mean, we'd have to run the numbers, but how much of a cash increase would there be? Because he's in last year, that 3-year deal, and it was base salary is probably on the higher end. You know, I don't know how much that cash increase would actually jump up. A couple million maybe, but it actually may not move the needle significantly from a cash standpoint in 2024.
Well, look at it this way. He's already on the books for $8.25 million in cash in 2024. Mm-hmm. Let's say you gave, I mean, let's say you did extend him. You would do so, obviously giving him at least that 8.25 in cash plus a little bit more. In other words, a signing bonus might, his total cash expenditure, let's say, goes up, and this is maybe high side, $5 million. So in other words, right, an addition, you know, all it would take is an additional $5 million in cash spending as opposed to what it is right now to get him locked up long term.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Even an extension doesn't move the cash needle all that much because he's already on the books for a high amount of cash this year.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, it's something to watch, something to monitor. You know, teams right, are
so,
obligated.
So let's say that did happen and you use five. You still got $13 million in cash that you would think that they're going to spend on bringing in somebody from the outside.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, again, nothing says they have to do it in year one. They may push it to more year two, year three, and be more aggressive down the line. I mean, that's plausible too.
All right. And people probably, we've spent way too long on this because people don't like talking about cash related to cap. Why do I do this? Well, it's easier than ever to track cash spending along with cap spending in every single year. A 3-year CBA plan also allows you to track it a lot easier now on top of it. And I'm getting deeper into this because I hope to be able to use it more as a predictive tool to say, this is what the team is likely to spend cap wise and basing that off of what they are likely to spend cash-wise.
Sure. No, I understand.
It's all part of what we've kind of prided ourselves on doing on this site, trying to be as predictive of what we think the team might do.
No, yeah. The purpose of this is that predictive power. And I think some of that was kind of borne out this year with the aggressive move of Patrick Queen and kind of judging where they would be at and likely to end up at. So there's a usefulness to it.
Now, once again, you roll back that $18 million sure would seem to fit into magically would work with a Brandon Ayuk addition and new deal. You know, you would spend slightly more than that, obviously, probably in first year cash on him, but it works if they decided to go down that road.
Yeah, so we will see. I'm very interested to hear from Kyle Shanahan tomorrow. Although I'm sure he won't say anything that'll knock your socks off, but something we'll be writing about, I'm sure.
No, if him and Lynch speak, it's going to be more toeing the company line of, hey, this is a guy we really would like to keep. Mm-hmm.
Sure, but we will write about it all the same and probably discuss it on Wednesday just as well and just the same.
All right. Anything else? Let's see. We are, what, an hour and a half almost into this?
Yeah, I think it's probably time to wrap things up, get to some reader emails, and close out today's show. No live stream tonight. Again, that's as scheduled. Be back on next Monday. So just a heads up on that information.
All right. This one just came in from Rob Jones. Quez Watkins, potential new kickoff rules coincide. He says, with the potential for the new kickoff rules, two return men needed on the field at the same time, he has in parentheses, who besides newly acquired Quez Watkins would be one of the returners, and does this give him a better shot at making the initial 53? What do you make of him saying two return men needed on the field at the same time?
I believe under the modified proposal, you would have two back-end players. Let me check the post I have on that, but I think there'd be a modification in terms of the alignment of the kick return team. So I think that's kind of what he's getting at there. You know, Watkins has not done a lot on kicks in college or in the NFL. The production is kind of meager overall. So it doesn't hurt him because there's a background to it, but I don't think it really, you know, dramatically changes things either in terms of other candidates. You know, Godwin Igwebuke, maybe Calvin Austin gets a look.
He's not
back
under
there.
Contract though. Godwin's
not. Oh, it's not. Okay. My mistake on that. We
see. He was a restricted, not tender.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So taking him out of the equation, maybe Calvin Austin. They'll have somebody in camp, undrafted guy, maybe late round pick, somebody they were hypothetically were to draft. It may be in that mix. But yeah, looking at the proposal, you would essentially have 9 players, it looks like, on the front line of your kick return team, basically almost all in a line. 2 players slightly pushed back, and then 2 return men standing opposite numbers of each other. So that's why he's saying about 2 kick returners.
All right. Todd Gensler writes in, hello, thank you for starters to tell listeners what you would do as compared to what you think the Steelers will do. I'm wondering about the big holes we have, specifically at the center position. We need one. Most mocks have them plug and play starters going late first to early mid second. If we pass at 20, the chances of getting a starter with our second pick is fairly slim. He writes, this puts us in a similar scenario to when we drafted Kendrick Green. What do you do? Do you trade back in the first, pick up more capital and get a center, or roll the dice and get either a cornerback, guard, wide receiver in the first and stay put? I just don't want to see another Kendrick Green situation for this team. We talked about this earlier in the show, Todd. I don't think you can specifically point taken on what you said really kind of recaps what we said earlier in this show. There is a lot of question of, do you, I guess the root of this goes back to 20 too early for a guy like Frazier, really, at its core?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question. And I don't know where the team would come in on that. My sense personally is that I think it's too early from where I graded him standpoint. But the team may feel differently. And of course, if they feel like he's a first round guy, then it's not too early.
John Lilly writes in, first of all, huge shout out to the best Steelers coverage in the nation. Thanks to the entire Steelers Depot team for all your hard work. It seemed to me that almost every other year there's a quarterback in the Super Bowl who wasn't drafted by his team, and often for similar reasons. Wilson was released. In recent years, we've seen Brady twice, Stanford, Garoppolo, Manning twice, and there's a long history of it in previous eras of football as well. Many of them were older quarterbacks with either injury concerns or deemed not worthy of being worthy of the big money contract. Then they signed for a more reasonable price with their new team with a strong defense. I'm coming into this season more optimistic about a Super Bowl push than I have been since the Killer Bees were together. Do you share my optimism that this is the best team that has been assembled since then? I think it's way too early to talk about an assembled team. I think where the optimism is and should be at this point, where it comes to this team potentially making a Super Bowl push, is the changes that they have made at the quarterback position and the addition of Patrick Queen. That's this team needed to do something at anything at the quarterback position, and they have done it. Whether or not it ends up being an extreme needle mover is yet to be seen, but this team had to do something at the quarterback position once again, and they did it. And it's point taken of things that have happened in the past around the league where cast off veterans have landed with new teams and the teams have made Super Bowl pushes. Point taken there. And I think that's part of why the Steelers went after a guy like Russell Wilson is, hey, this is a been there, done that kind of guy. He's being cast off. We believe that there's still something left there with the right team, the right offense, and the right defense to support him. Is that kind of your takeaway of all this? He's saying the title is why the dismissal of free agent quarterbacks for team building?
I don't want to necessarily dismiss it. Again, I think Pittsburgh has gotten better at the most important position in sports. And so that has to be recognized. And, while Pittsburgh does have a bunch of holes, if you improve the quarterback position greatly, it can mask some of those other issues. When you don't have good quarterback play, you better be really well-rounded at every other position. Otherwise, those issues get magnified. all the more. So while they have work to do at certainly these positions we've kind of run through, if you're better at quarterback, that rising tide will lift all boats. But I've just made the point of, if you look at who are the top teams in the NFL, they almost all consist of homegrown quarterbacks, guys that were drafted and typically in the first round, though not always in the top three. There's a lot of mid-round, first-round picks or top 10 type of guys, and even some later first-round picks. Yeah, I hadn't done a whole study on it, but just kind of thumbing through the list of Super Bowl matchups. I mean, I'm kind of eyeballing. I mean, there are some exceptions that he mentioned, Stafford, Peyton Manning with Denver, but I think about 20% of the time you have had a quarterback start the game that was not homegrown. I don't think it's as common as the reader is saying. The last 3 years they've all been homegrown quarterbacks. So I think generally speaking, the trend is pretty significant towards homegrown quarterbacks make it to Super Bowls. The veteran journeyman guys don't do it nearly as often.
Since the start of the new league year on March, what day was it? 15th. Are you more optimistic about this team than you were prior to it?
I am. I mean, I've been pretty consistent in saying that I think Wilson and the moves his team has made, although there's still outstanding ones to make, but assuming they will plug some of these holes that they have right now, receiver, center, they'll figure something out at slot corner. They are in now position to finally get over the hurdle of not winning a playoff game and breaking that playoff drought that I think is plaguing this team. And that is a large source of this urgency for this team to make some moves that are un-Steeler like moves. But do I view them as the ultimate Super Bowl contender? I do not. I don't think they put themselves in a position to do that. And I still have very much long-term questions about, okay, who is the quarterback of this team 2025 and beyond? I don't think anyone knows the answer to that right now.
And look, this team still has some holes that they need to address on this team, moving on through the rest of free agency and the draft.
Yeah, it's a good study, though. Excuse me, the reader has. I should do that. This past year, it was Purdy and Mahomes, so both homegrown. In 2022, it was Hurts and Mahomes, both homegrown. Obviously, Mahomes does populate this list pretty heavily. The year before was Burrow and Stafford, so Stafford was not homegrown. Burrow, of course, was. 2020 was Brady and Mahomes. Brady not homegrown. Mahomes was. In 19, it was Mahomes and Garoppolo. So again, one and one of each. 18, Brady and Goff, both homegrown. 17, it was Foles and Brady, both homegrown. 16, Brady and Matt Ryan, both homegrown. So again, there are some exceptions, but there's a lot more homegrown kids than not.
All right. I think I've got us caught up on emails. Anything else coming in late here?
Patrick Queen reacting to the hip drop tackle, not happy about that, saying they're going to go to two-hand touch next. Aaron Curry, a lot more optimistic, saying just run your feet and you'll be good. Did not tweet that at Queen directly, but he tweeted that out and reacting to the move. But yeah, that's all I got.
All right, bring us up to date on some pro day stuff here.
Yeah, you guys did a great job on Friday, I think, crushed it in terms of finding some of the pro day names out there. Again, mentioning Aaron Curry's been on the trail quite a bit this year. Was there another positional coach we saw? Curry was at Kentucky on Friday for Wallace. Let me just pull up my list here. Let's see, in terms of the more notable ones, again, Michigan, we already knew Tomlin, Khan, Arthur Smith, Terrell Austin, Kelvin Fisher at Missouri, Dan Rooney Jr. at Auburn. Where's Grady Brown been this year, Dave? I haven't seen Grady Brown. And I'm pretty sure he was not at Michigan because Jim Nagy tweeted out the list of coaches who were there, and he did not list the Steelers for the DB coach. So he was not at Auburn. Was he at Auburn? I don't think he was at Auburn because
I didn't see him. I saw who was it? Rooney Jr. And there was the other scout that I pointed out.
I forgot that. Update that. Dennis McInnes. Yeah, he was there. But yeah. That's just more area pro college scouts what he's listed as. So. Yeah, where in the world is Grady Brown right now? Maybe he's at places we've missed, but for the DB needs, I thought I would see him on the trail. Maybe at the Big 12 Pro Day. We'll have to wait and see.
All right. Let's see. We'll keep that running. Obviously, you can check that out on the site and a lot happening. I imagine middle of this week, things will start slowing down after the owners' meetings. At that point, it'll just be because probably not going to hear from Tomlin or Khan or anybody notable from that point moving forward. We might hear from some of these new players, obviously, that have yet to have pressers. Justin Fields, obviously, is yet to talk and all like that. So that'll probably be filler. But once we get past the middle of this week, I mean, it's just going to be pro day stuff and pre-draft stuff that's probably going to keep us occupied.
Yeah. Again, free agents should be brought in. I mean, way down the road before the draft, Tomlin and Khan should have their pre-draft press conference, but that's going to be for three weeks from now. Yeah, a little ways down the road.
All right. Until we get together on Wednesday, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button up right navigational bar. Good show today. A lot of Tomlin stuff to talk about. I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more of it on the Wednesday show. So until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.